customers. At the buyer's request and in a form approved by the buyer, the seller agrees to notify all customers of the business identified by buyer and all customers of the business during the year preceding the closing as identified by buyer, either separately or jointly with the buyer, of the buyer's purchase of the business and assets hereunder, and that all further communications or requests by such customers with respect to the business and assets shall be directed to the buyer. Without limiting the foregoing, promptly following the closing, the seller shall send a letter, in a form approved by the buyer, to each debtor with respect to the notes, accounts, or other receivables included in the assets, directing that all payments on account of such receivables made after the closing shall be made to the buyer. 7.8. Collection of Receivables. The seller agrees that it will reasonably cooperate with the buyer in collecting the notes, accounts, and other receivables included in the assets from any customers, and will immediately deliver to the buyer the amount paid on any and all receivables it collects after the closing date in connection with the business, less out-of-pocket expenses incurred by seller. 7.9. Brokers and Agents. Buyer, on the one hand, and the seller, on the other hand, agree to indemnify and hold the other harmless from and against all fees, expenses, commissions, and costs due and owing to any other broker, agent, or finder on account of or in any way resulting from any contract or understanding existing between the indemnifying party and such person. 8. Conditions precedent to closing. 8.1. Conditions precedent to the obligations of seller. Sellers and shareholders' obligations to consummate the transactions contemplated by this agreement shall be subject to the fulfillment, at or prior to closing, of each of the following conditions, any or all of which may be waived in writing, in whole or in part, by the seller and the shareholders. A. The buyer shall have performed and compiled in all material respects with each obligation and covenant required by this agreement to be performed or complied with by them prior to or at the closing. B. The representations and warranties of the buyer contained herein shall be true and correct in all material respects at and as of the closing date, as if made at and as of such time. C. Buyer shall have delivered to the seller the items set forth in Section 3.2b of this agreement. D. No action, suit, or proceeding by any person shall have been commenced and still be pending. No investigation by any governmental or regulatory authority shall have been commenced and still be pending. And no action, suit, or proceeding by any person shall have been threatened against the buyer, the seller, or the shareholders. A. Seeking to restrain, prevent, or change the transactions contemplated hereby, or questioning the validity or legality of any such transactions, or B, which, if resolved adversely to any party, would materially and adversely affect the business or condition, financial or otherwise, of the buyer or the seller. E. All proceedings to be taken by the buyer in connection with the transactions contemplated hereby, and all documents incident thereto, shall be reasonably satisfactory in form and substance to the seller and its counsel, and the seller and said counsel shall have received all such counterpart originals or certified copies, or other copies of such documents as it or they may reasonably request. F. Buyer shall have delivered to the seller the pledge agreement together with the marketable securities and other collateral securing the note. G. Buyer shall have delivered to the seller all such other certificates and documents as the seller and its counsel shall have reasonably requested. 8.2. Conditions precedent to the obligations of the buyer. The obligation of the buyer to consummate the transactions contemplated by this agreement shall be subject to the fulfillment, at or prior to closing, of each of the following conditions precedent, any or all of which may be waived in writing, in whole or in part, by the buyer. A. The seller shall have performed and complied in all material respects with each obligation and covenant required by this agreement to be performed or to be complied with by it on or prior to the closing date. B. the representations and warranties of the seller and the shareholders contained herein, or in any schedule attached hereto, shall be true and correct in all material respects, at and as of the closing date, as if made at and as of such time. C. The seller and the shareholders shall have delivered or caused delivery of the items set forth in Section 3-2A hereof. D. Except as otherwise set forth in this agreement, the buyer shall have received written evidence, in form and substance satisfactory to it, that all material consents, waivers, authorizations, and approvals of, or filings with, or notices to, governmental entities and third parties required in order that the transactions contemplated hereby be consummated have been obtained or made. E. There shall not have occurred since the balance sheet date any material damage or loss by theft, casualty, or otherwise, whether or not insured against by the seller or the shareholders, of all or any material portion of the assets, or any material adverse change in or interference with the business or the properties, assets, condition, financial or otherwise, or prospects of the seller. F. Buyer shall have entered into an employment agreement with Jane C. Doe and John F. Doe, in substantially the forms attached hereto as Exhibit G and Exhibit H, respectively. G. No action, suit, or proceeding by any person shall have been commenced and still be pending. No investigations by any governmental or regulatory authority shall have been commenced and still be pending. And no action, suit, or proceeding by any person shall have been threatened against the buyer, the seller, or the shareholders, A. seeking to restrain, prevent, or change the transactions contemplated hereby, or questioning the validity or legality of any such transactions, or B. which, if resolved adversely to any party, would materially and adversely affect the business or condition, financial or otherwise, of the buyer or the seller. H. All proceedings to be taken by the seller and the shareholders in connection with the transactions contemplated hereby, and all documents incident thereto, shall be reasonably satisfactory in form and substance to the buyer and its counsel, and the buyer and said counsel shall have received all such counterpart originals or certified copies or other copies of such documents as it or they may reasonably request. I. Seller shall have delivered to the buyer all such other certificates and documents as the buyer or its counsel shall have reasonably requested. 9. Indemnification, survival of representations and warranties. 9.1. Indemnification by seller and shareholders. Each of the sellers and the shareholders, jointly and severally, covenants and agrees to indemnify, defend, protect, and hold harmless the buyer and any of the buyer's officers, directors, stockholders, representatives, affiliates, assigns, successors in interest, and current and former employees, each only in their respective capacities as such, collectively the buyer-indemnified parties, from, against, and in respect of, A., any and all liabilities, claims, losses, damages, punitive damages, causes of action, lawsuits, administrative proceedings, demands, judgments, settlement payments, penalties, and costs and expenses, including, without limitation, reasonable attorney's fees, travel expenses, expert witness fees, and disbursements of every kind, nature, and description, collectively, damages, suffered, sustained, incurred, or paid by buyer or any other buyer-indemnified party in connection with, resulting from, or arising out of, either directly or indirectly, 1. Any misrepresentation or breach of any warranty of the seller or any shareholder set forth in this agreement, or any schedule or certificate delivered by or on behalf of the seller or any shareholder in connection herewith, or 2. any non-fulfillment of any covenant or agreement on the part of the seller or any shareholder set forth in this agreement, or 3. the business, operations, or assets of the seller prior to the closing date, or the actions or omissions of the seller's directors, officers, shareholders, employees, or agents prior to the closing date, except with respect to the assumed liabilities, or 4. the excluded liabilities. B. any and all damages incident to any of the foregoing or to the enforcement of this Section 9-1. 9-2. Limitation and expiration. The indemnification obligations under this Section 10 or in any other certificate or writing furnished in connections with the transactions contemplated hereby shall terminate on the later of A. the date that is 6 months after the expiration of the longest applicable federal or state statute of limitation, including extensions thereof, or B. if there is no applicable statute of limitation, 4 years after the closing date, or C. the final resolution of a claim or demand, a claim, as of the relevant dates described above in this section. 9-3. Indemnification by buyer. The buyer covenants and agrees to indemnify, defend, protect, and hold harmless the shareholders, the seller, and any of the seller's officers, directors, stockholders, representatives, affiliates, assigns, successors in interest, and current and former employees, each only in their respective capacities as such, collectively the seller-indemnified parties, from, against, and in respect of, A. any and all damages sustained, incurred, or paid by seller or any other seller-indemnified party in connection with, resulting from, or arising out of, either directly or indirectly, 1. any breach of any warranty of the buyer set forth in this agreement, or any schedule or certificate delivered by or on behalf of the buyer in connection herewith, or 2. any non-fulfillment of any covenant or agreement on the part of the buyer set forth in this agreement, or 3. the ownership of the purchased assets or the operation of the business by the buyer following the closing date, B. any and all damages incident to any of the foregoing or to the enforcement of this Section 9-3. 9-4. Notice procedures, claims. The obligations and liabilities of the parties under this section with respect to, relating to, caused, in whole or in part, by, or arising out of claims of third parties, individually a third-party claim, and collectively third-party claims, shall be subject to the following conditions. A. The party entitled to be indemnified hereunder, the indemnified party, shall give the party obligated to provide the indemnity, the indemnifying party, prompt notice of any third-party claim, the claim notice, provided that the failure to give such claim notice shall not affect the liability of the indemnifying party under this agreement, unless the failure materially and adversely affects the ability of the indemnifying party to defend the third-party claim. If the indemnifying party promptly acknowledges in writing its obligation to indemnify in accordance with the terms and subject to the limitations of such party's obligation to indemnify contained in this agreement with respect to that claim, the indemnifying party shall have a reasonable time to assume the defense of the third-party claim at its expense and with counsel of its choosing, which counsel shall be reasonably satisfactory to the indemnified party. Any claim notice shall identify, to the extent known to the indemnified party, the basis for the third-party claim, the facts giving rise to the third-party claim, and the estimated amount of the third-party claim, which estimate shall not be conclusive of the final amount of such claim or demand. The indemnified party shall make available to the indemnifying party copies of all relevant documents and records in its possession. B. If the indemnifying party, within a reasonable time after receipt of such claim notice, fails to assume the defense of any third-party claim in accordance with Section 9-4A, the indemnified party shall, upon further notice to the indemnifying party, have the right to undertake the defense, compromise, or settlement of the third-party claim at the expense and for the account and risk of the indemnifying party. C. Anything in this Section 9-4 to the contrary notwithstanding, 1. The indemnifying party shall not, without the written consent of the indemnified party, settle or compromise any third-party claim or consent to the entry of judgment, which does not include as an unconditional term thereof the giving by the claimant or the plaintiff to the indemnified party of an unconditional release from all liability in respect of the third-party claim, 2. If such third-party claim involves an issue or matter which the indemnified party believes could have a materially adverse effect on the indemnified party's business, operations, assets, properties, or prospects of its business, the indemnified party shall have the right to control the defense or settlement of any such claim or demand at the expense of the indemnified party without contribution from the indemnifying party. And, 3, the indemnified party shall have the right to employ its own counsel to defend any claim at the indemnifying party's expense if, X, the employment of such counsel by the indemnified party has been authorized by the indemnifying party, or Y, counsel selected by the indemnifying party shall have reasonably concluded that there may be a conflict of interest between the indemnifying party and the indemnified party in the conduct of the defense of such action, or Z, the indemnifying party shall not have employed counsel to assume the defense of such claim in accordance with Section 9(4)(a). D. In the event that the indemnified party should have a claim against the indemnifying party hereunder, which does not involve a claim or demand being asserted against or sought to be collected from it by a third party, the indemnified party shall promptly send a claim notice with respect to such claim to the indemnifying party. If the indemnifying party does not notify the indemnified party within 30 calendar days that it disputes such claim, the amount of such claim shall be conclusively deemed a liability of the indemnifying party hereunder. E. Nothing herein shall be deemed to prevent any indemnified party from making a claim hereunder for potential or contingent claims or demands, provided that, 1, the claim notice sets forth, A, the specific basis for any such potential or contingent claim or demand, and B, the estimated amount thereof, to the extent then feasible, and 2, the indemnified party has reasonable grounds to believe that such a claim or demand will be made. 9.5. Survival of Representations, Warranties, and Covenants. All representations, warranties, and covenants made by the seller, the shareholders, and the buyer in or pursuant to this agreement, or in any document delivered pursuant hereto, shall be deemed to have been made on the date of this agreement, except as otherwise provided herein, and if a closing occurs, as of the closing date. The representations of the seller and the shareholders will survive, and the closing, and remain in effect until, and will expire upon, the termination of the relevant indemnification obligation as provided in Section 9.2. The representations of buyer will survive and remain in effect until and will expire upon the later of the third anniversary of the closing date, or the satisfaction in full of any payment obligation pursuant to the promissory note. 9.6. Indemnification trigger. Notwithstanding the provisions of Section 9.1 or 9.3 above, neither seller nor buyer shall be liable to the other for any indemnification under this Section 9 unless and until the aggregate amount of damages due to an indemnified party exceeds $200,000, the trigger amount. Once the trigger amount has been exceeded, the indemnified party shall be entitled to indemnification for all damages, including the amount up to the trigger amount and any amount in excess thereof. The foregoing trigger provision shall not apply, however, with respect to any damages suffered, sustained, incurred, or paid by an indemnified party related to taxes or assessments by any governmental authority, or with respect to any claim of actual fraud or intentional misrepresentation relating to a breach of any representation or warranty in this agreement. 9.7. Remedies cumulative. The remedies set forth in this Section 9 are cumulative and shall not be construed to restrict or otherwise affect any other remedies that may be available to the indemnified parties under any other agreement or pursuant to statutory or common law. 10. Post-closing matters. 10.1. Transition services. The seller agrees to provide reasonable assistance to the buyer in connection with the transition of the business to the buyer. The shareholders will provide assistance to buyer in accordance with their respective employment agreement. 10.2. further assurances. The seller and each of the shareholders hereby covenants and agrees to A. make, execute, and deliver to the buyer any and all powers of attorney and other authority which the seller may lawfully make, execute, and deliver, in addition to any such powers and authorities as are contained herein, which may reasonably be or become necessary, proper, or convenient, to enable the buyer to reduce to possession, collect, enforce, own, or enjoy any and all rights and benefits in, to, with respect to, or in connection with, the assets, or any part or portion thereof, and B, upon the buyer's request, to take, in the seller's name, any and all steps, and to do any and all things which may be or become lawful and reasonably necessary, proper, convenient, or desirable, to enable the buyer to reduce to possession, collect, enforce, own, and enjoy any and all rights and benefits in, to, with respect to, or in connection with, the assets, and each and every part and portion thereof. The seller and each of the shareholders also covenants and agrees with the buyer, its successors and assigns, that the seller and each of the shareholders will do, execute, acknowledge, and deliver, or cause to be done, executed, acknowledged, and delivered, any and all such further reasonable acts, instruments, papers, and documents as may be necessary to carry out and effectuate the intent and purposes of this agreement. From and after the closing date, seller will promptly refer all inquiries with respect to ownership of the assets or the business to buyer. 10.3. Payment of liabilities, discharge of liens. The seller shall satisfy and discharge, as the same shall become due, of all seller's liabilities, obligations, debts, and commitments, including, but not limited to, tax liabilities, in accordance with this agreement, other than the assumed liabilities. 10.4. Transfer of permits, additional consents. Subsequent to the closing, seller shall use its commercially reasonable best efforts to effectively transfer to buyer all permits which were not so transferred at or prior to the closing, and to obtain all approvals, consents, and authorizations with respect to such transfers. In addition, subsequent to the closing, to the extent requested by buyer, seller shall use its reasonable efforts to obtain any required consents of the other parties to the scheduled contracts included in the assets to the assignment thereof to the buyer, which were not obtained at or prior to the closing. 10.5. Inspection of documents, books, and records, financial reports. Subsequent to the closing, buyer shall make available for inspection by seller or its authorized representatives during regular business hours and upon reasonable notice any original documents conveyed to buyer under this agreement. Upon reasonable notice to the buyer, for 5 years from the closing date forward, seller or its representatives shall be entitled, at seller's expense, to audit, copy, review, and inspect the buyer's books and records at the buyer's offices during reasonable business hours. For so long as any payment obligation is outstanding under this agreement, buyer shall make available to seller and its representatives copies of buyer's annual corporate tax returns and any quarterly financial statements or reports prepared or compiled by or for buyer. 10.6. Acceleration of notes. In the event that buyer shall subsequently sell, convey, transfer, or assign assets of the buyer to a non-affiliated third party, other than as collateral under a lien or security arrangement, the value of which is greater than 25% of the total assets of the buyer at the time of the transfer, all amounts of principal and interest then outstanding under both notes shall become immediately due and payable. 11. Risk of loss. Prior to the closing, the risk of loss, including damage and or destruction of all the seller's property and assets, including, without limitation, the assets, shall remain with the seller, and the legal doctrine known as the doctrine of equitable conversion shall not be applicable to this agreement or to any of the transactions contemplated hereby. 12. Miscellaneous. 12.1. Entire agreement. This agreement, and the exhibits and schedules to this agreement, constitute the entire agreement between the parties hereto with respect to the subject matter hereof, and supersede all prior negotiations, agreements, arrangements, and understandings, whether oral or written, among the parties hereto with respect to such subject matter, including, without limitation, the letter of intent dated blank, 20 blank, as amended, between the seller and the buyer. 12.2. No third-party beneficiary. Nothing expressed or implied in this agreement is intended, or shall be construed, to confer upon or give any person, firm, corporation, partnership, association, or other entity, other than the parties hereto and their respective successors and assigns, any rights or remedies under or by reason of this agreement. 12.3. Amendment. This agreement may not be amended or modified in any respect except by the mutual written agreement of the parties hereto. 12.4. Waivers and remedies. The waiver by any of the parties hereto of any other party's prompt and complete performance or breach or violation of any provision of this agreement shall not operate nor be construed as a waiver of any subsequent breach or violation, and the failure by any of the parties hereto to exercise any right or remedy which it may possess hereunder shall not operate nor be construed as a bar to the exercise of such right or remedy by such party upon the occurrence of any subsequent breach or violation. 12.5. Severability. If any term, provision, covenant, or restriction of this agreement, or the application thereof to any specific persons or circumstances, should be held by an administrative agency or court of competent jurisdiction to be invalid, void, or unenforceable, such term, provision, covenant, or restriction shall be modified to the minimum extent necessary in order to render it enforceable within such jurisdiction, consistent with the expressed objectives of the parties hereto. Further, the remainder of this agreement, and the application of such term, provision, covenant, or restriction to any other persons or circumstances, shall not be affected thereby, but rather shall be enforced to the greatest extent permitted by law. 12.6. Descriptive headings. Descriptive headings contained herein are for convenience only, and shall not control or affect the meaning or construction of any provision of this agreement. 12.7. Counterparts. This agreement may be executed in any number of counterparts, and by the separate parties hereto in separate counterparts, each of which shall be deemed to be one and the same instrument. 12.8. Notices. All notices, consents, requests, instructions, approvals, and other communications provided for herein, and all legal process in regard hereto, shall be in writing, and shall be deemed to have been duly given, A, when delivered by hand, B, when received by facsimile transmission, with printed confirmation of transmission, and verbal, telephonic confirmation of receipt, C, 1 day after being sent by a nationally recognized overnight express service, or D, 5 days after being deposited in the United States mail, by registered or certified mail, return receipt requested, postage prepaid, as follows. If to the seller, Target Co. Incorporated, 16602 Side Avenue, Anytown, USA, 01206. Attention, President. If to buyer, Growth Co. Corporation, 12345 Main Street, Anytown, USA, 01234. Attention, Chief Executive Officer. Or to such other address as any party hereto may from time to time designate in writing, delivered in a like manner. 12.9. Successors and Assigns. This agreement shall be binding upon, and shall inure to the benefit of the parties hereto and their respective successors and assigns. None of the parties hereto shall assign any of its rights or obligations hereunder, except with the express written consent of the other parties hereto. 12.10. Applicable Law. This agreement shall be governed by, and shall be construed, interpreted, and enforced in accordance with, the internal laws of the State of Maryland. 12.11. Expenses. Each of the parties hereto agrees to pay all of the respective expenses incurred by it in connection with the negotiation, preparation, execution, delivery, and performance of this agreement, and the consummation of the transactions contemplated hereby. 12.12. Confidentiality. except to the extent required for any party to obtain any approvals or consents required pursuant to the terms hereof, no party hereto shall divulge the existence of the terms of this agreement, or the transactions contemplated hereby, without the prior written approval of all of the parties hereto, except and as to the extent, 1. Obligated by law, or 2. Necessary for such party to defend or prosecute any litigation in connection with the transactions contemplated hereby. 12.13. Attorney's Fees. In the event any suit or other legal proceeding is brought for the enforcement of any of the provisions of this agreement, the parties hereto agree that the prevailing party or parties shall be entitled to recover from the other party or parties, upon final judgment on the merits, reasonable attorney's fees and expenses, including attorney's fees and expenses for any appeal, and costs incurred in bringing such suit or proceeding. In witness whereof, the parties have executed and delivered this agreement on the date first above written, Growth Co. Corporation, by blank, President, Target Co. Incorporated, by blank, Chief Executive Officer. Chapter 12. Keeping M&A Deals on Track. Managing the Deal Killers. Deal Killers. We have all seen them and been forced to manage through them. They come in all shapes, sizes, and varieties, with different reasons, justifications, and rationalizations. They can emanate from the buyer, the seller, or any number of third parties, such as lenders, investors, key customers or suppliers, professional advisors, or all of the above. Some deal killers are legitimate for deals that deserve to die, and some are emotional, financial, or strategic in nature. They can be very costly to all parties to the transaction, especially when significant costs have already been incurred. And, for certain advisors and investment bankers, they mean not getting paid. Clearly, deal killers inflict a lot of pain along their path of destruction of a transaction. In troubled financial times, deal killers can come as a shock and can be based on something as simple as a stark difference in the mindset of the parties or lenders or even investors about the markets. In strong and frothy economic times, deal killers will be rooted in greed and will often be based on disagreements over inflated valuations. Following the high-profile failure of several buyouts in 2008 to 2010, sellers resisted provisions that permit a buyer, under certain conditions, to walk away simply by paying a fee. But buyers, who face their own challenges in securing commitments from banks to fund deals, began pushing back. Many transactions derailed in 2008 and 2009 because of factors such as deteriorating global financial market conditions, buyers developing cold feet in the middle of the deal, seller remorse, disappointment caused by record low valuations, or even an overall transactional fatigue resulting from a loss of momentum among parties that are running out of steam. In 2008 through 2010, over 2,000 reported transactions derailed due to market or other conditions, and countless smaller and mid-market unreported transactions never made it to the closing table, despite the time, effort, and good intentions at the outset. Protection and risk allocation terms that hold significance in deals are being more hotly contested. M&A players seem content to remain on the bench rather than be on the playing field, and a notable number of them have retired hurt. In some instances, an immediate surfacing of post-closing integration issues involving post-transactional shareholder value creation challenges kills what would have been a deal to die for 2 years ago. The volatility in stock markets, one of the major driving factors for M&A, has further increased the uncertainties arising in the middle of the deal. In 2010 through 2017, market conditions improved and then strengthened, which together with more robust valuations and project management tools helped keep more M&A transactions on track toward closing. In M&A booms, as well as in tight financial markets, most deal killers can be put into one of the following major categories: price and valuation, terms and conditions, allocation of risk, third-party challenges, cold feet due to oscillating financial conditions. Communication and leadership. The first step in keeping a transaction on track and greatly increasing the chance of avoiding deal killers is to have strong communication and leadership by and among all parties and key players to the transaction. As in football, each team, for example, buyer, seller, source of capital, and so on, should appoint a quarterback who will be the point person for communication and coordination. Too many lines of communication will create confusion and misunderstanding, conditions that allow a deal killer to pollinate. The more the quarterbacks coordinate, communicate, and anticipate problems with the various members of their team, and promptly discuss key issues with the quarterbacks of the other teams, the greater the chances that the transaction can and will close. Some of the key tasks of the transactional quarterback and of each team to keep the transaction on track toward closing include putting a master strategic plan in place with realistic expectations regarding financial and post-closing objectives, building the right team, communication and teamwork, orchestration and leadership, momentum and timetable accord, avoiding emotion, the don't call my baby ugly syndrome, sellers, and falling in love with a given transaction, buyers, early start on governmental and third-party appeals, creative problem-solving, cooperation and support from financing sources, facilitating agreement on the key value drivers of the seller's business intellectual capital issues. Diagnosing the source of the problem. When a potential deal killer does arise, each quarterback should first diagnose the source of the problem. Where is the issue coming from, and what can be done to fix it? A deal killer for one party may not be a deal killer for another party. The old adage, "where you stand often depends on where you sit," clearly applies here. For example, a lender to a buyer coming in at a higher lending rate than anticipated may significantly alter the attractiveness of the transaction from the buyer's perspective, but may be viewed as a non-issue for the seller. The source of the problem will dictate the solution. Seller, stakeholders, minority shareholders, key employees, venture capital investors, family members. Buyer, sources of capital, debt, equity, mezzanine. All parties, third-party approaches, regulatory, lenders, lessors, unions, professional advisors, lawyers, CPAs, investment bankers, consultants. Understanding the types of deal killers. Once the source of the deal killer has been analyzed, the respective quarterbacks should focus on the specific type of deal killer. Most deal killers can and should be resolved through either creative restructuring, effective counseling, or precision document redrafting. Some deal killers cannot be resolved. They are just too big and hairy. And other deal killers should not be resolved, such as trying to squeeze a square peg into a round hole. Deal killers come in a wide variety of flavors and include the following: egos clashing, misalignment of objectives, inexperienced players, internal and external politics, board level, executives, venture investors, and so on, due diligence red flags, surprises, pricing and structural challenges, price versus terms, valuation problems, tax, source of financing in general, third-party approval delays, sellers, buyers, source of capital remorse, employee and customer issues, overdependence on the founder, key employee, key customer, or relationship. loss of trust or integrity during the transaction process, nepotism, failure to develop a mutually agreeable post-closing integration plan, shareholder approvals, accounting financial statement irregularities post-WorldCom, Sarbanes-Oxley post-closing compliance concerns, breakdowns in leadership and coordination, too little or too many points of communication, too little or too much principal-to-principal communication, crowded auctions, impatience to get to closing or loss of momentum, flow and timing issues, incompatibility of cultures and or business systems, for example, IT infrastructure, costs and budgeting policies, compensation and reward programs or accounting policies. Force-feeding deals that don't meet M&A objectives, square peg, round hole, bad deal avoidance, good deal capture, systems and filters. Who's driving the bus in this deal? Mergers versus acquisitions. Changes in the seller's performance during the transaction process. Upside surprises versus unexpected downside surprises. Loss of a key customer or strategic relationship during the transaction process. Failure to agree on post-closing obligations, roles, and responsibilities. Environmental problems. Buyers being less willing to rely on indemnification and insurance protections. Unexpected changes in the buyer's strategy or operations during the transaction process, including a change in management or strategic direction. Curing the transactional patient. Although a detailed discussion of the tools available to kill a deal killer is beyond the scope of this chapter, and is probably as broad as the number of tools available to the Orkin man to kill the hundreds of different insects and rodents, some of the more common tools are listed here. The first step is for each quarterback to ensure that the transaction can and should be fixed. In some cases, it may be best for the stakeholders, for all parties, to just walk away, hopefully peacefully. But if the transaction should proceed, then these tools can be very valuable in mending a broken deal. Earnouts or deferred and contingent post-closing consideration. Representations, warranties, and indemnities, tools to adjust the allocation and assumption of risk, weighting of priorities issues. Adjusting the post-closing survival period of representations and warranties. Holdbacks and security interests. Closing date audits. Third-party performance guarantees, performance bonds, escrows, M&A insurance policies, restrictions on the sale by the seller of the buyer's securities issued as part of the overall consideration, recasting of financial projections, and retooling post-closing business plans. Maintaining order in the M&A process. Simple principles for keeping deals on track. Put a master strategic plan in place, with realistic financial and post-closing synergy expectations. Build the right team. Designate a quarterback for each team for orchestration and leadership. Ensure communication and teamwork. Maintain momentum and timetable accord. Avoid ego and emotion. Sellers, don't call my baby ugly syndrome, and buyers, falling in love with a given transaction. Get an early start on government and third-party approvals. Have a clear understanding of conditions to closing. Engage in creative problem-solving. Identify potential troublemakers and rabble-rousers. Ensure cooperation and support from financing sources and their deal teams. Reach agreement on the key value drivers of the seller's business intellectual capital issues. Focus, focus, focus. The bottom line is coordinate, communicate, and anticipate equals no surprises. Conclusion. Bad deals deserve to die a peaceful death. Not all transactions are meant to be closed, one, at this time, two, at this valuation, three, between these parties, or for under these terms and conditions. But if a transaction can be saved, then it should be saved. The quarterback on each team must have the transactional experience, the business acumen, and the communication skills to diagnose the source and nature of the problem, and enough familiarity with all of the tools available to get the transaction back on track toward closing. Chapter 13. Post-closing challenges. The closing of a merger or acquisition usually leads to a great sigh of relief from the buyer, the seller, and their respective advisors. Everyone has worked hard to ensure that the process went smoothly and that all parties are happy with the end result. But the term closing can be misleading in that it suggests a sense of finality, when in truth, particularly for the buyer and the integration team, the hard work has just begun. Often one of the greatest challenges for the buyer is the post-closing integration of the two companies. The integration of human resources, the corporate cultures, the operating and management information systems, the accounting methods and financial practices, and related matters is often the most difficult part of completing a merger or acquisition. It is a time of fear, stress, and frustration for most of the employees who were not on the deal team and who may have only limited amounts of information regarding their roles in the post-closing organization. The creation of sustainable value after the merger requires a tremendous amount of strategizing and care in a lot of vital areas. It is estimated that as many as 3 out of every 5 M&A deals have an ineffective plan for the integration of the two companies. And even if there is a plan, well, plans don't always work out as anticipated. The consequences of a weak or ineffective transition plan are the buyer's inability to realize the transaction's true value because of either overestimated post-merger synergies, wasted time and resources devoted to solving post-closing problems, a badly conducted due diligence, unsolvable cultural differences, underestimation of stakeholder resistance, or in some cases even litigation. In this post-Sarbox and post-Madoff age of shareholder value and transparency being placed at a premium, companies cannot afford to move forward with a transaction that lacks an effective post-closing game plan. The focus of this chapter is on understanding and anticipating the nature and types of post-closing challenges faced by both buyer and seller after the deal is completed. The seller must facilitate a smooth transition of ownership and management to the buyer's team without ego, emotion, or politics. The buyer must have procedures in place to prevent the seller from undermining these transitional efforts and to assume control of the company, also without ego, emotion, or politics. Post-closing challenges may arise in a wide variety of subject areas, some of which are addressed in this chapter: operations, finance, personnel, information systems, and many other areas as set forth in the post-closing checklist. In order to achieve the desired synergies from a deal, effective and rigorous synergy management with a constant eye on milestones is required. As we will also hear, a series of emotional and psychological factors must be considered, and strong leadership is needed to guide affected employees through the process. Let's drill down on a few of these issues. Post-closing checklist. Human capital issues, cultural alignment, integration of leadership team, integration of staff, termination plan due to efficiencies and overlap, overseas workers, union issues, regulatory issues, temporary workers and part-time employees, independent contractors, relationship capital issues, integration of customer relationships, integration of supplier relationships, integration of channel partners, integration of advisory teams and consultants, integration of strategic alliance and joint venture partners, subcontractors and teaming relationships. Infrastructure, physical facilities, warehousing and logistics, information management and computer systems, regulatory and contractual controls, regulatory approvals, post-closing assignments and consents, branding and marketing, branding issues, communications issues, public relations strategy, redefining the customer value proposition, operational issues, store, office, trade, dress, and alignment, community relations, amendments to real estate and operating leases. A time of transition. Post-closing challenges raise a wide variety of human fears and uncertainties that must be understood and addressed by both the buyer and the seller. For affected employees and others in the transactional ecosystem, it is a time of uncertainty, chaos, and even trauma. Leaders of companies need to have a game plan to ensure that all affected parties continue to thrive amidst the turmoil. The fear of the unknown experienced by the seller's employees must be addressed and put to rest. Otherwise, the employee's stress and distraction will affect the seller's performance and the viability of the transaction. Since roughly 30% of the employees in a typical transaction will be redundant, many will focus not on their day-to-day tasks, but instead on wondering who will stay, who will go, and who will be reclassified, relocated, or reassigned. The need to integrate the two corporate cultures quickly also raises personal and psychological issues that must be addressed. Once word of a deal leaks out to employees, the uncertainty associated with the change is likely to lead to widespread insecurity and fear of job loss at all levels of the organization. Everyone affected by the transaction, either directly or indirectly, will inevitably ask four key questions. 1. What's going to happen to me? 2. What's expected of me? 3. What's in it for me? 4. How will my roles and responsibilities be affected? Be sure that post-closing planning and communication address these three fundamental human concerns. Take control of the rumor mill before it takes control of you and your transaction. Most rumor mills begin as a result of an information gap. It is the responsibility of senior management to fill this void with clear and consistent information at all levels, even if some of the data shared involves bad news. Leaving the door open to water cooler-driven information channels will often lead to the best and the brightest people heading for the exits, when it is often those exact folks who need to be directly motivated, given incentives, and retained. These issues are particularly challenging in cross-border transactions, where cultural, language, and legal differences may complicate these matters further. Many of the fears experienced by the employees of both the buyer and the seller result from expectations of downsizing to cut costs, avoid duplication, and achieve the economies of scale potential provided by the transaction. Another common problem is the psychological consequences of seller's remorse, particularly when the seller remains on site in a consulting capacity or even as a minority owner. The seller can be so accustomed to managing the business that he may not be open to the changes in strategies or policies implemented by the buyer. The seller undermines the buyer's efforts or contradicts its authority. These sellers often want the benefits of the bargain, but seem unwilling to accept the burden of the bargain and relinquish control of the company. These problems are particularly common in mergers, where the management and flow of the deal may be one of shared objectives and values, as opposed to an acquisition, which more clearly has a designated quarterback. In attempting to realize the true value of a merger or acquisition, the buyer must coordinate a smooth and efficient post-closing process. Important issues that need to be managed fall into three areas: people, places, and things. Some issues are addressed in the closing documents. Most require forethought in order to anticipate potential pitfalls. Some of the strategic issues that must be addressed are listed here, and some of the more common problems are addressed later. The bottom line is that if the buyer doesn't plan to address the following issues, the chances for failure or for not fully realizing success are greatly increased. Strategic post-closing issues. Who should lead the transition team? Which changes should be made, and how quickly? How will the changes be presented and sold? How can the seller's transition from owner to employee status be managed? How can turf wars be avoided? Common post-closing problems. Lack of communication. Weak leadership. Mistakes made in due diligence process. Realization of efficiencies and synergies took too long, or were obsolete or stale by the time they were achieved. Unexpected rapid shift in post-closing market or economic conditions. Unexpected post-closing third-party claims on liabilities. Cultural differences greater than predicted. Market share or valuation failed to be accretive. Indecisiveness as to timing and details of integration. Inexperience among executives or advisors. Post-closing synergies overestimated or unrealistic. Stakeholder resistance underestimated. Customer and channel partner loyalty overestimated. Technology integration or infrastructure costs well above budget. Staffing levels and related human resources challenges. One of the primary areas that an acquiring company looks to in order to realize the projected return on its investment is the new company's level of staffing, along with certain qualitative challenges for the workforce in the new entity. After a merger or an acquisition, the numbers must indeed work, but success depends on the people. If a certain number of employees can be eliminated, it is more likely that earnings projections will be met or exceeded. The hard part is deciding who stays, and in what positions, and who goes. Much of this depends on the nature of the acquisition. On the one hand, if the terms dictate that the acquired firm is to maintain its independence, it is much more difficult to reduce staffing levels. On the other hand, if the acquired firm is absorbed into the acquirer, staff cutbacks are probably appropriate and healthy. This is the greatest source of employee fear, and is the fuel that powers the rumor mill. But some of these fears are valid. An April 2005 report published by Challenger, Gray, and Christmas indicated that job cuts following M&A deals in the first quarter of 2005 soared to nearly 77,000, more than six times the rate of the last quarter of 2004, and three times the rate of the first quarter of 2004. The biggest cuts during that period came in the telecommunications and high-tech industries. Some of the biggest cuts were in the manufacturing, impact of automation and robotics and plant closing, and retail, impact of e-commerce and Web 2.0 sectors. The first step in determining staffing levels is to divide the workforce into management and staff labor. These two groups must be distinguished because their terms of employment are often quite different. Management employees often have employment contracts and may receive deferred compensation or stock options or present other issues. Staff members can be protected by union contracts as well as by federal or state and even local employment laws and regulations. Management. In many ways, management staffing is a much easier problem to resolve. Most employment agreements or management benefits can be quantified to determine the cost of such decisions. This should have been examined during the due diligence process and worked into the pricing for the transaction. The primary task in resolving the level of management staffing is to determine where there are redundancies and who the most qualified candidates are. Such a process is normally driven by the acquiring company, but it is not a bad idea to involve the acquired company as well. Only in this way can a true evaluation be made. failure to consider all candidates fairly may result in a lower return on the investment. All candidates must be evaluated objectively. It is often difficult to do so because emotions often cloud the judgment of the evaluators. For the acquiring company, choosing the incumbent management team is an easy decision. However, a formal evaluation of all candidates can lead